And we're live. This is more like what we had in mind. What time is it going to go? The Return to the Reality Show with your host, Rob Abston. George Orwell's dream came true, but no one realized it. Crushed us so nicely with so much wit and style. I love that song. It's by the World Entertainment War. So for those of you who don't know who George Orwell was, he was the author of the book 1984, which all of the media was owned by the government. Today, of course, all of our media is owned by the corporation. But then again, what's the difference? The point is that the information that you get and that I get through this corporate-owned media is going to be exactly what is in the best interest of this corporate-owned media, without regard to what might be true and factual. In any event, that's how we arrive at the title for this broadcast, Return to Reality. But let me turn the mic over to my good friend Rick Spezak to more formally introduce the Return to Reality show and me to you, our esteemed PNN listening audience.
But ladies and gentlemen, I would like nothing better than to introduce my friend and yours, a leader of so much good progressive media, Mr. Rob Abston, and his show, The Return to Reality Show with Rob Abston. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks, Rick. I really appreciate that introduction. And the reason we call it The Return to Reality Show is because the corporate media gives us anything but reality. And the whole point of PNN is to introduce a little bit of reality into everybody's mainstream consciousness. And, you know, maybe we can change that discussion going on at the water cooler. So how's your day shaping up there, Rick? You got a couple of minutes to stay with us while we get ready to introduce our first guest?
I sure do, Rob. There's so many interesting stories in the news right now. Of course, wars are popping across the globe. We've got the arms merchants rubbing their hands with glee in places as varied as the recent engagement in Africa. Of course, Libya is still in turmoil. The Ukraine is now working against the interests of the people with the fascists now in charge. And unfortunately, it looks like there's American fingers on some of the money's bags that are delivered over there. And, of course, They're engaged with Russian troops. Of course, there's no love lost there, and unfortunately, Ukraine has a long history of Nazi involvement. And then, of course, there's all the turmoil in the East, what formerly was the Soviet Union, and the president's flying over to Europe right now to meet with some of those the Baltic states about their concern. I have friends that recently were in Poland, and they said the entire Eastern Europe is all very much very, very worried about what's going on. And, of course, we've got the Holy Land known so remarkably for all the bomb and crater shells there. On the one hand, we're all happy that there's a temporary ceasefire between Israel and Palestine. On the other hand, we've just heard a huge announcement of expanded settler areas in Palestine. So that's a terrible shame. And, of course, those wonderful things we did for the Iraqis.
I was just going to say, with all of that craziness going on throughout the world, if we look right here close to home, we'll find that it is every bit as crazy. It might not be bombs dropping yet, but the corruption is rife. And, I mean, you, of course, have been working on many of those issues, drilling in the Everglades with your shows. And one of the things that we have a big problem right here in the United States, in Florida, not just in the United States, is with getting the right for everybody to vote, get every person getting the opportunity to actually cast a ballot. And that's what our guest is going to discuss with us, how California and Texas have recently stepped up to the plate to engage a new system of open source voting, where it can be, you know, we can have a little bit of confidence that it's being reviewed through people like you and me, who actually care about the fact that we get all the votes counted correctly. So absolutely, I mean, the world's in turmoil, Florida's in turmoil, California's in turmoil. Wouldn't you agree, Brent?
Absolutely. And, you know, by that same token, I think you're pointing in the right direction. If we can trust our banks online, why shouldn't we be able to trust our vote online?
Online would be a good place to get to. Brent, are you here with us?
I'm here. I'm online.
Excellent. I'm not sure that the open source voting is getting us online yet, but certainly that would be a good direction to head in my opinion.
Yes. Well, just by way of introduction, let me say hello to your audience. My name is Brent Turner, and I'm with the California Association of Voting Officials, and that's www.cavo-us.org. And I just wanted to thank both you, Rob, and Rick, for putting on another good show, and I'm always glad to be a part of it.
So, Brent, I appreciate that introduction. There's some good news. Let me first, I know that Rick is going to have to bow out here in a couple of minutes. Rick, let me give you the opportunity to share anything with the audience in terms of upcoming events, what you see as the future of this broadcast in conjunction with what you're already doing on Sunday evenings, and just generally, you know, what you can share with us before you have to get back to your the job that actually pays you some money.
Yes, you know, I am so proud to be part of Florida Media Labs. Florida Media Labs has generously stepped forward to help out the Progressive News Network, and Florida Media Labs will be expanding more and more broadcasters on the air. We've got a comedy show on Friday nights now. We're looking to be establishing a green organic growth show very soon. We've got producers in the wings who are going to start talking about xeriscape landscaping, about how to cultivate native plants. We look to have an organic chef on the air. And I think you can see lots of new programming coming from Progressive News Network, providing lots of ample opportunity for alternative voices, non-corporate voices here in the media. And I'm just so proud to be part of the Florida Media Labs. And Rob, your good efforts, which made so much of this possible. I can't say enough about this man. He's a progressive who we can count on, whose voice is true, and who's done nothing but work very, very hard for decades now to get progressive voices out there. Rob, I say thank you, and I'm going to have to say my farewell. So, bravo. It sounds like a really good show, and I'll be listening. Bye-bye.
Let me just say one thing on your way out the door, Rick. You make it sound
sure.
Like I'm 100 years old with those decades of experience. But thank you so much for that vote of confidence.
Okay, buddy. You have a good and the best of luck. Break a microphone.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
Bye-bye.
So here we go down the open source voting trail, and definitely a good trail to be on. I don't remember who said this. You probably or may well know the author of this quote, Brent, but somebody said that it was more important than who gets to vote is who counts the votes.
Yeah, that was Stalin.
Stalin, there you go.
Yeah.
So we know about what happened in Florida in 2000 and the fact that we didn't get the president that we elected. We know what happened in Ohio when the Secretary of State promised to deliver the Republican vote for the state of Ohio, and he was certainly in a position to do that.
since he was a part owner in the voting machine company that was doing the counting of the votes. So I think with that backdrop, what you're doing is just tremendously important today. And I think you've got some really good news to tell us about, don't you, Brent?
Well, you know, I do, Rob, a little bit, although I'm always guardedly optimistic, but it's interesting to see the progression in that we can now observe a corner being turned in that the initially back in 2000 when we started this work, the words open source and that sort of jargon were not in conversations. So now it's interesting that we've at least come as far, so far, so as to now hear and utilize the words open source when we're talking about election systems and best practices. So there is not currently a jurisdiction in the United States utilizing open source, but we're thinking that we're moving in that direction, and now I'll tell you why with a quick history and sort of right up to the minute. As you mentioned, of course, we had the breakdown with the Hanging Chad in 2000, and that prompted HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, to subsidize funding for electronic machines nationally. Well, there were only four companies really to choose from, and what they did was they took the money, the $4.5 billion with a B dollars, and they gave all the jurisdictions systems that operate on what we call corporate owned closed secret software that is inside the machines and belongs combination Microsoft and the vendor's own code and all the corporate interests. Well, as you mentioned, with Blackwell in Ohio and that happening again in 2004, people became aware that, again, there seemed to be missing parts within the chain of custody of the election counts. And in 2004, a group, Open Voting Consortium, demonstrated what we call the Deckert design, and that is a paper ballot printing system that operates on open source. So since 2004, these systems could have been moving forward, but now here it is 10 years later, and we're just seeing signs of open source systems coming into conversations, and you mentioned specifically Texas and California. Well, Texas may do some good work there in that they're certainly looking to take control of their systems, understand that all the systems nationally now are at the end of their life. So the election administrators have to do something. They just can't stand in place. And their choices are either to try and purchase the same kind of machines that have been a pain in their rear for the past 10 years, that are very pricey, or do what we suggest, which is put together off-the-shelf hardware with free open source software and suffer the pains of a transition away from the vendor model into a publicly owned system that is a lot less expensive and a lot more secure. Because if the audience isn't aware, when you have open source, it makes bugging or buggy code observable and then treatable. The way the current systems work, if there was a bug inside the software making the machines act inappropriately, that would be very hard to detect. because of the sheer volume of the code and the fact it has the intellectual property protection around the code. And then on top of it, the systems themselves are designed poorly currently. So that's pretty much where we are in California. We think we're going to have a good Secretary of State coming into office. It looks that way. Senator Padilla, who authored a bill, SB 360, basically allowing the state of California to opt out of the federal certification process. So there's another side to this as well, where a lot of states are still bound to the federal certification process. So we're advising states to promulgate legislation and do like California did with SB 360 and get away, opt out of the federal certification process, because that's a broken process that needs a complete overhaul. And the EAC is dysfunctional currently on top of it. So you've got a real mess on your hands, but I think what we're going to see hopefully is California lead on it and develop, certify, and deploy what we call general public license, open source software voting systems. And what we're advising in closing, and then ask me any questions you like, is that the counties, the jurisdictions, all pool their resources and get systems certified. And then they can all share in those systems and the evolution of those systems, because when it's open source, that means it's all shareable and everybody knows everything. And, of course, not to be confused with, some people will say, well, you know, naively, open source, well, doesn't that mean that a kid could fiddle with it? And of course, that's not what it means. Open source means that it's observable by the scientific community, and that's what the Air Force and Department of Defense use for mission critical operations. So that's it in a nutshell. I hope that, you know, I always kind of tell the story different because there's always different things happening, but that seems to be a little background on where we've been and where we're going.
Yeah, of course, I'm a computer programmer, I think you know, Brent. So
yes.
I know a lot about open source, and Apache web server, for example, is probably the most secure web server that you can get, certainly
yes.
Much more secure than a Microsoft IIS, Internet Information Server, and way less buggy because it's mature, and it has had the, as you pointed out, it has had the work of thousands of people's eyes on this code to ensure that the bugs are fixed when they arise and that they don't crop up in the first place. So there's no question about the security of open source. As, again, you pointed out, even the federal government's starting to recognize that, and a lot of commercial and government agencies are now moving more and more towards open source just because of its reliability and its security. You mentioned the Deckert paper ballot design, one of the early designs, and I had the good fortune of having, not met in person, but having engaged in a number of conversations with Alan Deckert, who was behind that design.
Yes.
And I know that you know him personally, Brent.
Yes.
Would you like to share a little bit about the all of the hard work that Alan put in to the early efforts behind this?
I sure would, and thanks for mentioning it, because it's so often sort of glossed over, his contribution, and that's not appropriate. He is a founder of the movement toward open source voting technology, and came up with the original design and demonstration of a system that now, 15 years later, 20 years later is looking like it will be the design of LA County, in that the voter experience is going to a computer, pressing Kucinich, and a ballot spits out that says Kucinich printed on the ballot, as well as other choices, and then a open source barcode on the bottom of the ballot. So that was his very simple design for election poll site systems. And currently he's working on smartphone voting and internet voting, and this is what he believes will be the next phase. Obviously, we're seeing internet voting. We haven't got to smartphone voting yet, but he believes, and of course I've known him to be correct, in that I think back in 2000 he was, if not one of the few, maybe the only one with the right answer. So I think having the right answer with something as crucial as this deserves all kinds of respect. And so when he mentions now that smartphones are really the way to go, of course it makes a lot of sense, but there's a lot of naysayers in the community that don't want any internet voting, and they do not want certainly smartphone voting. So it's always a push and pull with that, but we're seeing the state of Alaska utilizing internet technology. Of course, Estonia has gone completely internet for their voting. And, you know, that's a whole other subject. But first, and back to Alan for a second, again, I appreciate you highlighting it, because he did a tremendous amount of work himself, Open Voting Consortium, for the past decade. And then finally he moved on. He's also desalinization and energy plants and designs and other things. So he's always busy. But, now this California Association of Voting Officials has popped up as the vehicle that we really see as a moving force here, because basically what that is a oversight organization to make sure that when we look at jurisdictions like Texas, like California, that best practices are being entered into the conversation, and that hopefully the final result is what we are sticklers for, which is what I mentioned, the general public license software code, open source, and you know, off the shelf components. So
I guess if your party has a shrinking minority, and you know that you get every member of your party out to vote, you probably would like it if not so many of the other folks got the opportunity. So I get your point on that. I think if I remember correctly, one of the early counties to start talking about open source in California, was that in Inyo County?
Right. Right. That's Cammy Foote, who is the president of CAVO, the California Association of Voting Officials. She is a dynamo that understands the issue up and down, because, of course, she actually administers elections and runs election systems hands-on. And she has her own reasons, but, you know, she's been in predicaments because of the current systems, and doesn't appreciate that. So she's really pushing for publicly owned systems that would be higher level and save the day for the rest of the jurisdictions throughout the country, because they look to California for leadership on this for some reason, and LA County specifically. Well, L.A. County has been sitting on 60, 70 million some odd dollars for voting systems that they have at their disposal, whereas the rest of the country is broke. So L.A. County, we hope, does the right thing. They've been talking about open source, and we tell them, make sure it's general public license, and we hope they understand off-the-shelf commodity, not a vendor involved that creates, you know, a design that locks people out. We want, you know, the best we can have, and so that seems to be the way it's going right now. But Texas might also surprise me, but they've got you know the problem with this thing is, just to be really frank with you, Rob, is the intellectual property community, the lobbyists for the intellectual property community, they go after open source language and legislation very much, and have it removed from federal and state legislation because it gets in the way of their gravy train. And this has been the big stumbling block for us, is every time we try to get something accomplished, it's, you know, Davy versus Goliath, us going up against this massive attack from the intellectual property lobbyists. So we have our work cut out for us, but again, I'm seeing progress.
So what do you expect or hope to see happen? I guess where we're at right now is probably where we're going to be at in November in terms of the mechanism for voting and for getting those votes counted. But what do you see as the immediate future? Do you see us possibly moving into an open source voting environment as early as the 2016 election?
Well, you know, that would be ideal if we can get there that fast and have some transition, maybe some limited usage, some precinct usage of open source systems. Of course, I advocate precinct counts, which is another issue. You know, I'm no fan of the central tabulation system. I want the counts secured at the precinct level and finalized right there before transportation and all that. But we may get something like that by 2016. There will be naturally, it won't just be a push the button and we're switched from one system to the other. It will be a political decision made in each jurisdiction across the country, and some will, some won't, but we just keep fighting, thinking that one day we'll look back and say, can you believe we ever used corporate-owned software when it comes to counting the votes? Because how preposterous and dangerous is that to the free world, that you would have a corporation anywhere near the chain of custody when you're talking about the sanctity of the vote count and democracy? So it's like living in a parallel universe doing this work, because it seems so obvious that it should already be accomplished yesterday. But that being said, we just keep banging away at it, and I think one of these days we'll get there. First things first, we're hopeful California does it, and then, you know, I think the rest may follow.
So then the next question arises, as you pointed out, we're 10 years into the current system since 2000, and if in fact we're at the end of the useful life of the systems we're currently using, does that mean that we're still going to be using these antiquated systems until that political decision gets made?
I think so. They'll probably have all sorts of Band-Aids on them. Somebody might buy a new one, and then that's just like the old ones, you know. But I think that's going to be it. And it's a real crisis. So we're seeing, like, the National Association of Counties just came out with a newsletter regarding this issue. You know, people are getting wise to it, and of course the election administrators have gotten wise to the what we call the vendor trap that they're in. And it's an interesting moment in the history of our country right now to see which way this thing goes. But as you know, the president just had an election committee report come out that said we should be utilizing new technology. Well, that's what we're talking about, and getting the counties to do it is another matter. It's gathering political will for it, and again, we have these major forces against it. Now, I said to the Attorney General in California under Jerry Brown years back that I would expect intellectual property lobbyists to stand down on this issue and not pressure the politicians, understanding the national security ramifications. And the Attorney General fellow said to me, "Mr. Turner, don't be naive." So that was a good education for me. That's all I needed to hear.
Well, now you said something that's a little confusing to me, Brent, because I always have been under the impression that it's the state, not the individual counties, that decide what kind of voting equipment that is going to be used in elections. I thought that was mandated by state law. Are you saying that every county election superintendent has the authority to do open source voting?
In its current situation, no. But if in California things progress, then yes, the counties play in. Of course, the state has to allow it, but then the counties would be able to make their own decision on, whether or not once it's allowed by a state, then the counties will make their own decisions as to what they're going to do. We would think that if we can get a leader Secretary of State into California like we expect, and at that point we'll utilize universities as partners regarding the effort, and certain counties have already shown by joining CAVO, the California Association of Voting Officials, that they are predisposed to analyze this issue further and that they understand it. So they're already getting in the conversation flow, and I think that's how it will roll out. Again, it will be some will, some won't, and some will lead, some will resist. But in the end, I think, I don't want to say peer pressure, but there's a certain follow the leader mentality that happens where once they feel that it's safe to move in that direction, and they understand the taxpayer savings and the control betterment and the security upgrade, that I believe we'll see entire states go that direction eventually. That's the hope.
Well, the reason I ask is because you pointed out a few minutes ago that the big hurdle to overcome isn't the technology hurdle or the logistics hurdle. The big hurdle is the political one. And if
yes,
we wanted to exert some political pressure, then I would, if it's mandated at the state level, then probably the political pressure would need to be exerted there. But what I hear you saying is that we can actually put that political pressure, that citizen pressure, on our elected officials at the county level to move in the direction of open source voting.
And that's right.
More specifically, you talked about an association of voting officials in California, and that sounds to me like a mechanism for doing that sort of political lobbying. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but...
No, you're exactly right, and you said it better than I did. So that's clearly how the purpose of the California Association of Voting Officials, there is now, we just formed the National Association of Voting Officials, and the idea is there should be a FAVO, the Florida Association of Voting Officials. This would be all the... I don't want to say progressive because, of course, that has connotations and it's a nonpartisan issue. I happen to be a Democrat chairing my county for election reform. Cammie, the president of the California Association, is a Republican. It is a nonpartisan issue. But I will say that the more technology progressively minded registrars and administrators will understand it and stand up, and that's what we've seen in California, because now we're up to 20 counties and moving upward that are basically standing up and saying, okay, enough is enough. Let's analyze options that may be available to us and get into some detail here, because what we've been doing may not be sustainable here.
Well, it's interesting to hear that you have Republicans who are also interested in the open source voting, because while on the one hand, it seems to me that it shouldn't be a partisan issue,
right.
Voting has seemed in Florida to be very much a partisan issue.
Yeah.
One party wants everybody to vote, and the other party doesn't.
Well, this issue where we're starting with this foundation is, let's all agree we want the votes counted with the absolute utmost security and with as least amount of risk as possible. So everybody has to stipulate that one, or you know, that's un-American. Regarding the enfranchisement issue, I understand, and it's been a horrible situation with front-end disenfranchisement. Of course, that's making people stand in lines or not letting them vote at all. The other one, what we call back-end disenfranchisement, is letting them vote and then not counting their vote or counting their vote incorrectly. So it's all disenfranchisement, but... from my position, of course, we have to, even as a Democrat, we have to keep lines of communication completely open to any Republican input, because, of course, to do otherwise would not be appropriate. So Cammie, again, is a Republican. I'm a Democrat. We never talk about it, because as long as we're saying general public license open source software with these better systems, I don't care if you're a Martian.
Exactly. Well, and that's the way it should be.
Right.
That is exactly the way it should be. It's a shame that we suffer through all of these Jim Crow tactics down here in Florida.
Yeah.
But that's just what it is.
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, you know, to me, And here I'll put on my tinfoil hat for you. I almost think it's a little misdirection. I really appreciate you having this show because, again, all that front-end disenfranchisement, that's horrible, and we need to remedy it immediately. But lest we forget the back end of the situation, and let's not let all our focus go into talking about long lines, although – that conversation needs to stay strong and it needs to be remedied yesterday. But also, lest we forget the what we've been talking about on your show today, which is
exactly
the software code and the counts, because we want a first count that's secured, and right now it's not.
Are you familiar with what happened in the Supreme Court judge election? Judicial election in Wisconsin what was it, 2012?
You know, I might be, refresh me.
No, it was in 2010.
I'll tell you if it rings a bell.
It was in 2010. It was during the time that all of the It was after Scott Walker had gotten elected, and everybody descended on the Capitol and was up in arms, and they started the recall effort. And there was a Supreme Court judgeship up for grabs, and the lady who actually won the election was not predisposed toward Scott Walker. And then suddenly, that night, one of the election officials discovered a bag of
yes.
votes that hadn't been counted and that right. had a hole big enough in the top that you could reach your hand in and take out votes and put in votes.
I do recall that. Yeah, and you know, I've got a buddy there, Kevin Kratch, who there's a Facebook page, Wisconsin Will Be Saved. If you're not familiar with it, go and make friends there. You know, they're quite on top of the Wisconsin and the Government Accountability Board there and
right.
and trying to press for answers, and then also, of course, complaining about the current systems gets you nowhere. You gotta spoon feed them solution to expedite. So I think they're in the midst of that. They're hopefully talking about open source options and moving away from these horrible vendor sold models.
So, but what do you do about the cases where you have corrupt election officials? I mean, at the end
of
the day,
prosecute, I guess. Yeah, prosecute. Now, if you've got bad eggs in there, that's exactly the reason why you want to go open source. I mean, I won't say it completely eradicates them, but it certainly disempowers bad actors. Because, as you know, under the current systems, you could get in and out of a system without leaving fingerprints, as it can be self-erasing. And with the open source systems we're advocating, that none of that would be happening. Not to say it's completely impossible, but it just creates a flipping of the deterrent factor, what I call the deterrent factor, in that you would have a lot of trouble under our system affecting a small amount of votes, and you're probably going to get caught. Under the current systems, it would be easy to affect a whole bunch of votes, and it would be very unlikely you would get caught. So,
let me ask you a question, Brett.
Yeah.
Under the Deckard paper model, part of the idea, correct me if I'm wrong on this, part of the idea was that your vote would actually be tabulated electronically, but you would have a paper trail. You would actually walk out of the voting machine with a piece of paper in your pocket with the actual vote that was cast that you could look at and see that it was, in fact, cast the way you intended it to be cast. Is that correct?
No, no. So that's not correct. So the Deckert design is and we want to eliminate the word paper trail, because paper trail was a boondoggle that, if you research the National Science Foundation grant in 2004 of $7.5 million that went to David Dill and Avi Rubin and the big study group there, eventuated in the voter verified paper audit trail model, which has been a disaster. So the Deckert design dispensed a paper ballot that would be the actual ballot and counted as the ballot, and it would not leave with the voter, but the voter would be able to take a look at the ballot and then hand it to the election administrator for deposit in the box. So it would be an actual ballot that could be read and verified by the voter, different than the voter verified paper audit trail that stays inside the machine like a cash register roll, and has proven very difficult to read and not a good idea for other security reasons. So that was the difference in the Deckert design, is that it is one version of it that the voter could actually look at the ballot in their hand and then hand it to the election official for placement in the ballot box. And that was the idea. And then ideally, it would be counted at the precinct level in a community atmosphere by either running it through a open source tabulator or by one in smaller communities wanding the vote with an open source wand, and then having the reader announce the vote as it appears on the ballot, and it would also project up on a big screen and tabulate incrementally to the pleasure of the audience. And so it would be a community situation at the precinct level, and that was something we had fun with in different jurisdictions when we would go to demonstrate, because people would, you know, see Obama plus one and everybody would yell, yay! But anyway, that's the Deckert design.
So, Brent, now just tell me if I'm getting too personal here, but it sounds like you are devoting like 100% of your time to this effort. Are you able to somehow be paid for your time so that you can pay your bills while you're doing this? Is very important work, and I'm glad you're doing it. Is this something that needs to be publicly supported, or are you able to actually get some kind of a salary from some sort of a nonprofit organization in order to make all of this possible?
No, we have done this on fumes as pro bono activists, and it's you know, taken a toll, and I appreciate you asking. We have become experts on running on fumes, so it is, I think, sustainable in this moment. Over the past decade, of course, it's been hell, but my father taught me, once a job is first begun, never stop it till it's done. Be it large or be it small, do it well or not at all. So I will be doing this till my last breath. And if you ever see me and you're driving down the road along the one in California and I'm hitchhiking, please pick me up and take me out for lunch.
Yeah, I can see it with one of the signs that says, we'll count votes for food.
Yeah, no, it's been a very interesting experience. You know, gave me an education in political science I don't think I could have learned anywhere. You know, I feel duty-bound to continue the work. And there's now great people showing up to join in. And like I said, a lot of interest, whereas years back, it felt, you know, like too much Davy versus Goliath with nobody listening. But the reason we're energized in this moment is because we're feeling like the country, because of the circumstance of their systems being at end of life, this is a really crucial moment to get them educated on this option that they have available and encourage them to move on it and guide them. And then in the end, take a look and just make sure that no wise guy put a little intellectual property code or nuanced the licensing of the open source software. And that's another issue that I just want to give you this right here at the end. There's been talk of other groups that are kind of sorta open source, advocating kind of sorta open source software systems for voting. Well, we are sticklers for the general public license flavor of open source software. And that's for numerous detailed reasons, which I know you probably know about. We don't need to bore the audience, but if they want to do the investigation themselves, you know, take a look at general public license open source software to understand that that gives the biggest access to the community, and there's really no reason to do anything else but general public license open source. That's what really has the most quality to it and disallows gamesmanship within the environment. So we're sticklers on that, and I think we've gone through a lot of the points, although I'm glad to spend more time with you. I'm just glad that we've had this conversation, because I think it's a good one to have in this moment.
Yeah, there's one piece of the puzzle that I'm not sure that we talked about, Brent.
Okay.
And I think we've got about 10 more minutes, so
okay.
Unless you're
perfect.
Really
no,
eager
I'm,
to write
I'm,
off.
I'm with you.
We talked about the hurdles that are standing in the way of getting to the open source. We talked about the history of the open source. We talked about what the open source actually is and how it works. But now it seems like there's one other piece of the puzzle, and I just sort of was reminded of it as you were talking about being careful not to fall for some gimmick of somebody claiming open source but slipped his little piece of proprietary stuff in there. And that has to do with process. In addition to having good open source technology and equipment and the political will to put it into place, after it's in place, there has to be a process, it seems to me, to prevent it from being corrupted. I mean, there has to be some oversight. And maybe that's part of what this Association of Voting Officials in California, maybe that's one of the roles that they play. But would you like to talk a little bit about what the process to maintain a good open source voting system might be after we magically find ourselves in that transferred to that world?
Yes, and of course that's absolutely correct. Again, that the surrounding protocols and the support systems and all that, all the procedure that surrounds an election has to be up to par as well. And for that, we are hopeful that CAVO and CAVO University, if we can get that put together, that we stay always in education mode with the administrators, and they will have a bit of a learning curve. Also, as is part and parcel to the open source community, there will be service providers, and already are service providers popping up that will fill that void and give support to the administrators. Basically, we're encouraging the current vendors and all nouveau members, vendors, to change their paradigm when it comes to this election business and consider themselves service providers rather than software salesmen. And I think they'll take their place in the arena, and also the counties will be able to educate up and have a team within that can be helpful in conjunction with the vendors, in conjunction the service providers, in conjunction with the CAVO and NAVO and other state chapters that should be good information hubs for all of this. So I think that's how that will unfurl. That's my take on it.
Do you see a need for a certification process for these service providers?
Yes, I do. And, you know, everybody has to be on the same page. And, again, I think the devil is in the details there. That'll all come out. Certainly the systems have to be certified. The service providers should be certified. That may be a CAVO role or a state-filled role. But certainly it's all doable. And it's, as you know, what we're talking about is far above the current situation where it's just, you know, business as usual. And of course we know where that gets us, business as usual. It gets us, where we see, you know, with all our other situations in the world. We can't have that sort of psychology when it comes to counting our votes. I mean, it almost makes me chuckle or cry, because the fact we're even having to have this conversation again is a bit absurd.
It is. And, you know, we like to think that we in the United States have a monopoly on the democratic process, and yet we have so many hurdles standing in our way to have the sense of the integrity of the democratic process. Grant, I'd like to just take the last couple of minutes to ask if, you know, apart from, I know your focus is like 99.99% on open source voting. I mean, you've been living, breathing, and talking this for a decade now. Can you step outside of that role and just speak in general terms about what you see as, I don't know, where you would like to be this time next year, or what you think is the important things aside from open source voting in terms of our civic stature as a, either in your state of California or nationally, or just kind of open it up a little bit beyond mm-hmm. the open source voting question.
Well, you're going to out me, and then it'll be obvious. But I already said, you know, that you and I are the same, and we probably have the same view on a majority of issues, if not all. Of course, the environment and energy and water and our natural resources are showing themselves as priority number one. Red alert. A lot of the people involved in this open source world actually come out of sustainability and environmental work, understanding that unless we get proper vote counts, we may not be able to intellectualize ourselves out of some of these problems plaguing us through democracy. So getting a proper vote count seems to be pervasive when we talk about all these other issues. But, you know, I'm an environmentalist, a sustainability person. I don't want another issue that obviously presented itself recently was the militarization of the local police forces. Which is another absurdity that we would have tanks rolling through the streets of our cities.
That's horrible.
So, you know, we're looking for leadership, and I think we may be on the mend here. I think our country and world took a massive, devastating hit, maybe because of our inability in America to get a proper vote count. We want to make sure that never happens again. You know, historically, people have always cheated if they can when it comes to elections. That's the history. So we just want to hopefully in the next year or so be seeing some of this work come to fruition and into the reality of election administration. And, that's my hope for the next year, is that it moves along.
So I just want to say thank you, Brent, for coming on and talking with the audience about the open source voting question. I appreciate the work that you're doing, and I'm sure all of our audience does. We just really thank you for all your hard work.
Hey, I appreciate it, and again, that's Cavo, CAVO-US.org. Check it out, and I hope we're back together again in the near future.
All right. Thank you, Brent.
Thank you.
There's a better world that's a-coming, tell you why. There's a better world that's a-coming, tell you why. We will beat 'em on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world that's a-coming, tell you why. There's a better world that's a-coming, don't you see. There's a better world that's a-coming, don't you see. When we'll all be union, and we'll all be free. There's a better world.